All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, week two of the preseason edition. I am Bobby Fenton, live here on JoeBucksFan.com. Actually, it's not live, it's a podcast, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing it live. And we're coming to you. I wanted to cut the shows these next couple weeks earlier in the week. There was no sense putting out a podcast on Thursday afternoon or Friday morning when the Bucks play on Saturday. So I'm trying to do it earlier in the week. That way we can kind of evaluate what happened in the game. It's not too far in the rearview mirror that it doesn't matter to talk about it anymore and still look ahead. So this week we got what happened the other night, which was the preseason game against the Dolphins, the only preseason game that will be here in Tampa, and the Bucks lose, of course, 26-24. This week, they're getting on a plane. They're going to Nashville. They're going to have joint practices with the Titans, just like they did here with the Dolphins, then play them on Saturday night up in Nashville for preseason game number two. Then we'll have one more to go, and we start just closing in, and we'll talk about everything going on with the Bucks today because there's been some developments. Of course, there was the game Saturday, some resulting injuries, nothing crazy, but a little bit of stuff there, some roster moves, and now we go ahead to game number two. I want to talk about Kyle Trask. You know, the thing about these preseason games, when they're all you have to go on, you want to cut them and splice them every which way. And honestly, the only things I was really paying that much attention to Saturday night would be Trask. I was interested in, you know, see what Borregalis did. And of course, there was a mixed bag there, if you want to say. And same thing with Carmada, the punter. And those are guys that, I mean, and Trask is not going to factor this season, we hope. But, I mean, that's just one thing that, if, as far as the franchise goes, you wonder about, hey, like, how's this going to affect the franchise? A lot of this other stuff, you know, I'm not going to get too wrapped up in how the number eight offensive lineman did versus the number seven offensive lineman and bottom of the roster guys. I've never been able to get into that. I think people, again, they spend a lot of time on it when it's all you have, but we're not going to go nuts with that stuff today. But there was plenty of stuff that's pertinent that I want to get to. So thank you for joining us. As always, you want to get a hold of me? Easy to do. Email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at bobbygameday. So the game Saturday, first of all, weather was great. Seems like every year that first preseason game, there's always a rain thing. Sometimes there's even a delay, nothing like that. It was a pretty easy game to watch compared to some other preseason games we've seen before. I mean, if you look at past preseason games, they've just been brutal slogs, tons of penalties, no rhythm to the game. There weren't a lot of penalties in this one. It flowed pretty well. It was obviously an exciting game, not that the outcome matters, but it kept you involved that way, especially if you like to put an occasional dollar or two down on these games, which I encourage you all to try because preseason football gets fun real quick with just a few bucks on it, and this one certainly was going back and forth all night, but let's talk about what we saw out there and before we move on to what's ahead, because the big story, like I said, Kyle Trask. I have been, and I hear people all the time saying to me that people that know I went to UF and I'm, you know, a guy who goes to UF games and follows Gator football and things like that. They always say, your boy Trask. How? What about your boy Trask? And I love Trask. Love what he did at UF. Will always be grateful. I was actually in the stands in Lexington, Kentucky, that night a few years ago when Felipe Franks hurt his knee and the Gators were trailing and Kyle Trask trotted in. I wasn't even sure who they were going to bring in. I was like, at the time, I was like, is Emory Jones coming in? Is Trask coming in? I don't know. And they brought in Trask. He led them back to a victory on the bluegrass. I remember being there. It was a fun night. And then, of course, went on and played really well at the University of Florida. Got a second-round pick out of the deal with the Bucks, and I honestly was a little skeptical. And still am. I was not, you know, again, nothing against Trask. I always liked him at UF. I didn't feel like he translated into a big-time NFL stud. And certainly, when you look at the way quarterbacks get drafted now, the franchise guys, quote-unquote, are the ones you take in the top 5, 10, maybe even 15 or 20. Once you get to the second round, you're not necessarily expecting that. And yet, I mean, you know, obviously it's 2022. This whole thing with Tom Brady, whatever the hell is going on, and I don't have any inside information for you, but whatever it is, we assume it'll be okay and he'll be back. So, okay, it's 2022 and that's what we're thinking about right now. But if you think about the future of the franchise, and I mean like the almost immediate future after this season, it's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, they don't have a quarterback, assuming Tom Brady is playing his final season as a Buccaneer, which I think is a pretty widely held assumption right now. So if you've got that to deal with not too far in the future, and I know we all want to just win the Super Bowl in 2022 and not worry about anything else until later, but you got to think about these things. Kyle Trask, okay. Didn't look great last year and what minimal action we saw of him in the preseason. This year, getting more of a look. You know, they gave Gabbert the first couple of series just because he's technically still the number two, which I don't know. Hopefully the first thing we can do is if Trask is really, you know, as good as he's supposed to be, he'd be the number two quarterback. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is, Gabbert got his first two series out of the way. He was fine, whatever. Then Trask comes in. I don't think he was, like, everybody's raving in some corners of the internet and Twitter and all that stuff. I mean, he was good. They didn't do a ton with him downfield or anything, especially early in the game. The opening drive was good. They did get a, I mean, he had a couple, like, he had a screen pass, right, that the guy broke for, like, 30, 40 yards, which isn't anything. So, I mean, I think it's more of a thing with Trask's performance the other night that I'm staying in the middle. I wasn't, like, crazy head over heels. Oh, my God. I mean, he's definitely made improvement. There's no question about that, and he should be proud of that. I mean, when he played in the preseason last year, he made me think of, like, Steve Walsh and stuff, and that's not what I want to think about when I think of Bucs quarterbacks. So, big step forward now. But it wasn't, like, crazy unreal. I mean, he made a few nice throws. They weren't doing a ton of stuff, and I understand that. On the other side, though, those two turnovers before the half, I didn't think those were terrible either. I mean, the one interception he threw, which could almost have been regarded as a fumble recovery by the Dolphins, but I guess it was never possessed by Rashad White. But it was a third down. They're probably punting no matter what, so there's no need to make a little lateral throw there, basically. It's not going to get you the first down anyway. He gets it there a little too late. Dolphins defender comes up, meets the ball. Probably an incomplete pass under normal circumstances, but a freak circus play. Guy gets an interception. Whatever. Fine. You know, just eat the ball, take the sack, punt. Then the scoop and score the Dolphins had, he got blindsided, ball came out. I didn't think that was like a ball security issue or something that he did irresponsibly or anything like that. You always want guys to have pocket presence and eyes in the back of their head and recognize when they're about to be blindside flattened by somebody who just beat your left tackle. But looking at that play, I didn't think Trask did anything like irresponsible with the football. Obviously, it wasn't a good result. So I wasn't, you know, those two things were fine. I wasn't upset about those two things. And I also think as far as passing goes, I mean, he was okay. The final drive of the game was really, really good. And he's doing that. You know, the Bucs were down by 2 points. They got the ball at their own 11. What was there? 3.5 minutes left. So that's a good, like, laboratory right there. Let's see. That's the stuff you want from your quarterback. It's not just the regular garden variety, how many yards, completion percentage, blah, blah, blah. All right, we're down by 2. We got 3 minutes. We got the ball at our own 11. Crappy field position. Can you get us there? And look, I know he's going up against, obviously, the very bottom of the roster guys on the other side in a situation like that in a preseason game. But he also had, okay, the last five of the Bucs offensive linemen, whoever the bottom five are, that's who he had. Whoever the bottom three or four wide receivers are, as of right now on the Bucs roster, that's who he had. So it goes both ways. And he got him down there. And even a bad holding penalty set him up. I mean, what was it? It was 3rd and 22, I think, after a holding penalty. 3rd and 21. And they were on their own 22. After they'd gotten a few yards, not looking real good there. And I even thought about maybe for the Dolphins, and this is preseason, so it doesn't matter, but like strategically, if they decline that holding penalty, it's just 4th and 10 right there. Do you want to give the Bucs 2 cracks at 21 yards or 1 crack at 10? As it stood, they got about 10 on the next play and ended up with a 4th and 10 or 11 anyway. But he did it. Like, they get, okay, they had to get a do or die first down from 3rd and 20 something. And he went out and made it happen. Got him down the field, got him into field goal range. Borgalis, you know, they called the timeout right before he is about to kick the old, let's call the timeout right before they snap it. He kicked it anyway, which I think they're changing. They didn't call it, but just as an aside, I think now, you know how they do those last-second timeouts, and some coaches like to really cut it close to try and mess with the timing, mess with the kicker's head, whatever the reason. And I think now they're doing it where if you still go and kick the ball, like take a practice swing, they call you for delay a game. They didn't call it on Borgalis there, though. So he drilled that kick. I don't know if anybody noticed it on the telecast. That one sailed high and straight and floated right through with, like, another 10 yards to spare from 49 yards out, and it was just the practice kick. So, okay, let's do it again from 49 yards. And then he hits the funny one, didn't really hit it well at all. And even if it had gone in, it wouldn't have been a good kick, but it was knuckling weird. Hits the upright, misses, Bucks lose 26-24. We'll talk about the kicking situation more in a little bit. But Trask, like, did his job there, and the whole offense did their job there. So that was something. It's too early to really, like, make definitive conclusions, but I'll say this, okay? I seriously, and this is just my gut feeling, okay? I've been wrong many times before. I hope I'm wrong again. I don't look at Kyle Trask and feel like, okay, we're going to build our franchise around him and we're going to go forward and he's the unquestioned guy. And like I always say, man, it ain't easy if you're running an NFL franchise, okay? There are teams, there's like a select few teams out of the 32. There's what, maybe five or six? It's the best feeling in the world, by the way, if you're one of them, which we are right now. But it's fleeting too sometimes. All right, what are there, five, six, maybe seven teams who are just 100% completely, we're good at quarterback. Like, that's where every team wants to be. Above all the other things, personnel-wise, or above all the other things, franchise-wise, that you're trying to be, you know, besides, obviously, Super Bowl champion, the things you want to do in order to be Super Bowl champion, what is the number one thing you want to be? Totally fine at quarterback. Like, I don't even think about it at night. That's our quarterback so-and-so, whether it's Josh Allen in Buffalo, whether it's Aaron Rodgers for Green Bay, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, you know, however many you think there are teams that, okay, we wouldn't even explore trying to upgrade at this position because this is our guy, period. And we're riding this guy for 10 more years or whatever. It's a great spot. It's a great spot. So the Bucs are in that club right now with Tom Brady, and then they're not going to be in that club after the end of this season. No matter what. I mean, even if Kyle Trask ends up being good, we won't know that yet. So we'll be in that position where we're like, oh, quarterback, I don't know, man. And teams that are like, ooh, quarterback, I don't know, man. Those teams don't, like, go to the playoffs and the Super Bowl, right? Like, we know that. And we want to be one of those teams. So, you know, it's not easy, even though I'm sitting here making it sound easy. Oh, we got to do something that quarterback do better. You know, I think they're really hoping, obviously, of course they are. They drafted him in the second round. They're really hoping he pans out. And there's time to tell between now and then. But I still don't feel like, I mean, that first preseason showing last season, he had never done any of this before. Okay, I can forgive that. I mean, a lot of times with these guys, though, usually you know pretty quick. I think a good modest first step in his second year would be to be able to be number two instead of number three. We'll see. And he's going to get more looks in Tennessee on Saturday night and all through the preseason. And then if all goes according to plan for the 2022 season, we hopefully don't see much of him again the rest of 2022. So this August is a big month for Kyle Trask and a big month for the Bucs franchise, not necessarily for 2022, but looking ahead. So we'll see. I remain a little skeptical, though. Like, I feel like his ceiling is higher than I thought it was, you know, maybe 6 months ago, but I still don't feel like it's bona fide, hell yes guy, basically. Like, there's, you know, six, seven, eight quarterbacks in the NFL that are hell yeah, hell yes. Josh Allen, hell yes, that's our quarterback. You know? Aaron Rodgers, hell yes. Like, you don't even, that's those guys. Patrick Mahomes, a few of them. And so, I don't know, hard to imagine Kyle Trask being that to me. But we shall see. Other things that were going on Saturday night, we talked about the kicking thing. So, you got Borgalis versus Succop. They gave Borgalis all the kicks on Saturday. Now, the big thing here is salary, because Succop's going to make a lot more if they keep him, and the Bucks are going to be up against cap stuff this coming offseason. So I feel like it's his job, Borgalis's job, to lose because of that. I mean, if it's six of one, half dozen of the other, you're going to take the cheaper guy. Now, kicker is an important position, and so if you legitimately think your team has a better chance to go far and win and play in the games you want to play in January because of one guy over another, then you throw salary out the window. Of course, you know, you're always trying to do the best you can for the team. But if it's really, really that close and you're feeling like, is it that big of a difference? You know, tie goes to the guy who's not making as much. And Borgalis hit the 55-yarder, which is longer than any kick the Bucks have made in the past few years, regular season include everything. And then, of course, he had a chance to, you know, and that one would have really, if he had made that kick, it would have capped off a near perfect night for him. And it didn't happen. And that's okay. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to take more than a miss like that for Borealis not to be the guy. In fact, like, you think of, like, Aguayo, like, what a disaster that was when he just started missing right and left. Like, something like that would have to be, I think, what it takes for Succop to remain the kicker. I think they're both good, but, I mean, again, the money thing and the salary cap thing and all that stuff. So, okay, fine. You know, and we'll keep an eye on it and see what... Also, we'll see what they do, if they're going to give Succop the entire workload again, you know, to alternate the way they did it with Borealis on this past Saturday, or who kicks more in Tennessee or whatever. But, you know, not the end of the world to me that he missed that kick. And he's been pretty good. I mean, even the misses... I think Greg Allman, the Bucks beat writer for The Athletic, was saying even his misses in a lot of the camp sessions have been off uprights. He's been, like, I know it's like horseshoes, okay? Only close doesn't count. You got to either make it or not. But he's around the, he doesn't miss by much. I mean, he's always right around there. He's a pretty accurate kicker. So we'll see going forward what else there is to see about the kicking situation. But looking at the rest of the situations. Running back's a little intriguing from Saturday night. I mean, again, you can't tell much, but they did split it around pretty good. The Bucks ran the ball, and we'll get to all this, you know, when the games count, as far as play selection and strategy and fourth down decisions with Todd Bowles and, you know, all the things that go into not the X's and O's part of football, but the actual, you know, game theory part of football. But the Bucks ran on 12 of 13 first downs during this game, and that's fine in a preseason game. Who cares? They're keeping everything very vanilla. But it is interesting to note, of those first down runs, okay, of the 12 carries, and Barner only had one, but the other three running men, and Barner's out now anyway with the injury, so he's not going to be around. Giovanni Bernard, 5 carries. These are just first down carries now, okay? Giovanni Bernard, 5 carries, 9 yards, almost 2 yards per carry. Not quite, though. Keshawn Vaughn, 6 carries, 6 yards. 1 yard per carry, right? Quick math. Rashad White, 5 carries, 30 yards. 6 yards per carry. He had one big one for 12, but even if you take that one away, he got 4, 4, 5, and 5. He was getting, you know, decent yardage on those early down carries. In fact, Rashad White, the whole game, he was in there for 15 snaps, okay? He had 7 carries, and then he had 2 receptions and another target, so 3 targets. So 10 times out of 15 plays he was in the game, the ball came his way, whether it be handing it off or throwing it to him. So they're obviously giving him a look, and he looked good. I thought he looked good, and you know how I am. If you've ever listened to my show before or heard enough of my show, you know my stance on running backs. They're interchangeable. Don't ever spend too much on them. Don't ever get freaked out about, oh, this guy got hurt, that guy, whatever. Next guy goes in, he's just as likely. It's totally almost, I don't say random, but it doesn't matter that much, all right? It's not like the 1990s where Emmitt Smith or Barry Sanders or Terrell Davis or somebody, you know, could take over a game, and like if you had that stud running back, you were in control. It ain't that way anymore, okay? 7th round, 2nd round, free agent, whatever, which is why I say don't spend high picks on running backs. With that said, White looked really good, and I, you know, Fournette obviously is the uncontested guy, and not just on the first two downs. He's supposed to be all down guy and all that stuff. But when they do give him a blow, or if he does get hurt or anything else, just seeing this little small sample so far, White definitely stood out Saturday. So if you're into the whole running back battle, and I don't put too much stock in it either way, that was encouraging to see that he, you know, I mean, they spent a draft pick on this guy, so let's hope something comes of it. And he looked good. And he looked good, like, running in, catching the ball. And he looked like a guy who can make things happen. Very smooth. He's got a way of moving. He's like velvety when he moves. And just like the way he cuts and things like that. So that was something worth looking at. The punter. I didn't talk about the punter thing. And I don't think I talked about this on any of my previous shows. Jake Carmada, they draft him out of Georgia. So back during the draft, okay, you know, there's this guy, you may have heard of him, he's known as the punt god, Matt Ariza from San Diego State, who's got one of the most thunderous legs that the NFL has seen, certainly in years, and he was ripping off like 80-something yard punts for San Diego State, just doing ridiculous things, like hitting routinely over 60, doing all this stuff, and you can argue about whether you should draft a punter or not ever. But if you really truly think that's a weapon and you want to spend a later round draft pick on it, fair enough. That's a guy who can make a difference on your team for a long time. Okay. So the Bucks did that, but then they didn't draft the punt god. They drafted Carmada, who's good. I mean, you know, but he's like a jag, I call it. Just another guy. Like, they got, okay, he's a punter. Whatever. If you're going to make an exception and draft a punter, which you could argue, you know, you shouldn't do, it's got to be a special, like, imagine having this guy, the punt god, out there and saying, okay, we're actually going to be bold here and take a punter with a draft pick, but then not making it that guy. Because that's what the Bucs did. And maybe you saw it if you saw the highlights this weekend. It's too early. I'm not saying it's Carmada could go to the Hall of Fame and Ariza could be a flash in the pan. Too early to say. But you might have seen Matt Ariza for the Bills hit an 82-yarder in his first preseason game, his first punt. And it actually went in the end zone and we rolled a few more yards. If he actually had checked it up at the one or two, it would have been an 81-yard net if they had downed it at the one. But since it was a touchback, it was only, air quotes, a 62-yard net. And I heard all this crap when the draft, I don't know if it's true, okay, but people were speculating, well, you know, it's not just about distance with a punter, it's directional punting, and the NFL really, you know, it's more about being able to put the ball, shut up. If a guy can punt the ball 80 yards, that's your punter, okay? I don't want to hear about directional punting. So Carmada, for his part, his first punt was not great. His second one, he did drop it in at the 5-yard line for a fair catch. Now, why the hell you'd fair catch a punt at the 5 is beyond me, but the Dolphins punt returner decided to do that. So, you know, if the ball hit the ground, maybe it bites like a wedge and stays there inside the 5, or maybe it rolls in the end zone, but whatever. He got them to catch a ball at the 5-yard line. So that's good, because it's not just distance. Yes, that much is true. It's not just distance. It is definitely ability to pin kicks deep. I can't stand when you're punting from like midfield and then your punter like drops the ball in the end zone instead of putting it down at like the 9-ish, 8-ish, you know, somewhere in there and letting your team down. And now they come out to the 20-yard line. You just netted like 20 yards in exchange for giving the ball away when you could have gone for it on fourth down. I hate that. So that's a skill too. But it's also pretty cool when you get the ball at your own 18. You're thinking, oh, man, they're going to have good field position here. Oh, no, I'll just punt it to the other end zone, and then it'll be an 80-yard punt, and they can go back on their 20-yard line. That's pretty cool, too. Now, you have to weigh that. And I'm not ripping Carmada. He kicked off, too. He did pretty okay. Whatever. You know, I'm just saying I was surprised. And I'm going to keep an eye on this, and I'm definitely going to harp on it if Ariza continues to be the punt god. And Carmada continues, or not to say continues, but Carmada ends up being just another guy. Because you don't want to draft punters unless they're, like, I remember you ever read about, like, John Madden and Al Davis talking about Ray Guy. And how, like, John Madden and Al Davis got along pretty well. They had some disagreements, like any other head coach and GM, but they were pretty much in tune with what they wanted to do. And sometimes, like, Al Davis was big on corners. And John Madden was bigger on the offensive line, but they both agreed that the other guy's preference was the second most important thing anyway. So they still, but when that year came up and they were like, well, who do we draft without even having talked to each other first, they both said, oh, Ray Guy. Like it was a no-brainer. Like that's when you have a punter like that, you know, it's one of the only times you do something like that. So I thought Ariza kind of fits that bill. And so if you had told me before the draft we weren't going to draft a punter at all, fine. But if you said we were, and that Ariza would be on the board and it wouldn't be him, I would have been a little surprised. And now I'm keeping an eye on it. I'm sure all the NFL special teams people are keeping an eye on it. But anyway, that was another thing I noticed from Saturday night. Besides that, you know, hey, here we are in the preseason. We do this every year. We get so excited for it. I mean, I've been posting countdowns on Twitter and stuff like that, counting down the days. And then you get like 10 minutes into that first preseason game and you're like, okay, I'm good now. I'm ready for the actual season. And every year there's always the, oh, why don't we just get rid of this all together? And listen, you have to imagine, you're thinking, oh, this is so much crappier than a regular season game. But that's not what you compare preseason to. At least unless you want to see 20 regular season games, which I don't. I don't even want to see 18 or even 17. I liked it at 16. So would you rather have had no preseason games at all this past weekend? Because I'd like, it's something. Just like next weekend. Coming up Saturday, Tennessee. Okay, I mean, it'll be boring after the first 10 minutes, sure. But it's still like, I'm already in my mind looking ahead to the weekend thinking, okay, got a Bucs game Saturday night. Like, that's what I'm doing Saturday night. Which may be lame. But hey, again, it's, and by the way, this is the last weekend of the year where there's no meaningful football. So, like, you do have preseason games, but starting next weekend, there is a slate of college games. It's not the major opening weekend. Like, there's only, it's a soft opening. There's like 15 games. Labor Day weekend, of course, is always the big extravaganza. But there is meaningful football after this weekend every single weekend until Super Bowl in February of 2023. And that's a beautiful thing. And in the meantime, we got preseason football to kind of hold us over until then. So looking ahead, oh, one other thing I wanted to mention. And it's interesting because, you know, this Tom Brady phenomenon, beyond the results on the field, it gets people excited off the field too. And the Bucs are selling more tickets than they have at any point since, you know, the glory days in the late 90s, early 2000s, when there was a 70,000 person waiting list or whatever it was. You know, they're getting not that deep on the waiting list, but they're selling out nearly the whole stadium with season tickets, although you still can get season tickets. And they know this is Brady's final year with the Bucs, right? So they're trying to milk everything they can out of it, which I understand. So if you were there Saturday night, you may have noticed the seats in the south end zone with the added bleachers now extending those end zone seats up higher. And they have done this before only for big special events. They did it for the Super Bowls they've hosted there. They did it for the national championship game they hosted there between Clemson and Alabama. And, you know, it's only those select, like, big-time events that they add. Wait, it's like 4,000 extra seats, so it gets it up closer to 70,000. And they decided this year to actually do it for Bucs games. So I was there Saturday. I actually walked out on the field during warm-ups and just wanted to see, like, what it looked like. And I've been in the stadium before, you know, for the Super Bowl and all that stuff, and seen what it looks like, but I want to see how it looked for Bucs games. And it's fine. I mean, it's just more end zone seats. But I was a little bit, and I'm thinking of this from a fan standpoint now, and if you just go and sit in your seat, which, you know, a lot of people do, most people probably do, then it's fine. I have always done this, though. Going back to the 90s when I used to go, I mean, I went to 100 and something straight Bucs games, okay? And I had season tickets up in section 318 in the corner. Because why? Because they were the least expensive ones. I didn't care. I just wanted to get in. And so I would never go up to those seats, though. I would just use those tickets to get in. And then I would go to those railings they have. They have them in both end zones, right? In the south end zone, they had the railing there. And you could, you know, on that little, what do you call it, the Pirate's Cove or whatever it's called, you know, where we had the palm trees and there's picnic tables. But there's a railing there and you can stand straight in the end zone. I always love the end zone view. I mean, it's a great view, great spot. It can be a little tricky to get spots on the railing, but it's not that hard. And I'm tall enough where if I'm too deep, I'm fine. Me and my buddy Drew used to do that every game. And of course, they have the same exact thing on the north end zone side where the pirate ship is. So it's been getting a little more crowded lately, right? It's a little tougher to do that now just because of the Bucs popularity, which is fine. That's a good thing. But now you've taken away because these seats are on top of where that used to be. So now there is no, basically, common area. I always think stadiums need common areas. You know, areas where people, no matter where their tickets are, can just stand and watch. Because I like to stand anyway. I don't like to sit in a little seat and just sit there. I like to kind of stand, hang out, talk to people. Friends would, they'd always know where I was because I was always in the same place. So friends would stop by, like, you know, especially in between quarters or throughout the game. I'd see so many people walking by. I always liked it. So now you only have one of those common areas in the north end zone. So you take away the south end zone one, it's going to get even more crowded in the north end zone. It's going to be harder to do that. There's going to be the same amount of people trying to do that and fewer, you know, available, less available space to be able to do it. So I was up, you know, I was not in the stands as a fan on Saturday, but when I do that, you know, I'm not looking forward to the idea of having double the amount of people shoving around in the common area. Scott Brantley, who I used to do a radio show with, always say, common area, Bobby. Good stadium's got common area. He's right. He was right then, and it's still true today. You know, all the best stadiums, they have places where you can just kind of go, or maybe maybe you got a single ticket here and your buddy got a single ticket there and you can't sit together, but hell, we'll just go to whatever spot and we'll watch it from there. You know, I always like having the ability to do that. So the new seats do look good. I mean, it doesn't look bad or anything like that, but I kind of miss, I also liked like the view on kicks, like for extra points and things like that. You saw the palm trees and everything else. Although I think the camera that shows those is facing the north end zone, so you don't lose that view on the field goal attempts because the ball's coming at you in the end zone. They have the new seats in. But it's just, you know, little things like that are things I notice. And it was something I noticed on Saturday. Of course, the Bucks won't be back here now until week three. They got two straight road preseason games, then two straight games on the road to open the season in weeks one and two. So the Bucks won't be back in town for a while. And that was our home preseason game for the year. And I think that's just fine with most people, especially season ticket holders who have to pay full price for those games. BobbyGameDay at yahoo.com is the email address, BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay at yahoo.com. And on Twitter, if you want to follow or just tweet at me or whatever, it's at BobbyGameDay, same exact thing. Couple notes on the injury front. Oh, and the signing, of course, well, one follows the other because Cam Gill up there on the defensive front, you know, he's got a Lisfranc injury in the foot, same type of thing Levante David was kind of been dealing with, only these vary in seriousness, so I don't think he's going to be around for a while. And neither do the Bucks, but Carl Nassib is back, old friend. Of course, the Bucks picked him up off waivers from Cleveland a few years ago, and he did really well. Had 6.5 and 6 sacks before going to the Raiders the past couple seasons. Didn't have as much success there with 4 total sacks in those 2 years, but going to be playing on the same defense he played in with Todd Bowles. Now Todd Bowles is the head coach, but nothing really changing there. And he is back with the Buccaneers. And that's a good signing. I mean, again, it's a depth thing more than anything. Got to help out with some injuries. But like somebody like him coming in that has experience on this team, has had success in this defense before. So he's in there. As far as the waived guys, you know, I'm recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Today at 5 is the deadline to get down to 85 from 90. So they had to waive 5 guys, of course, since they brought in Nassib. They had to waive an extra guy. But Russ Cockrell is the only one who is like a recognizable name who was let go out of that group. And they said they wanted to do that early with him just because they knew he was not going to make the team, but also think he has a good chance. He does have a good chance to land on a roster somewhere else, so they wanted to get him out there available, kind of a favor to him with a little more time. And I expect him to catch on and be in somebody else's camp coming up soon. Although, technically, there is no more training camp. Training camp is pretty much closed now. The Bucks are in just regular game week mode, so this week will be on the road practicing up in Nashville, and then they'll play the game, come back home, same thing next week for one more game, and then we got the off week before the regular season starts. So it's inching closer and closer now, but it was good to actually see the Bucks out on the field, those uniforms, painted lines, score being kept, all that stuff, real life football, and we look forward to a lot more of it this week. Hey, if you're looking to buy a vehicle, maybe get yourself into something new before the season begins here. Kind of start things off with football season the right way. All you have to do, just like always, is go to BillCurryFord.com. Remember, they spell it C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You get the completely transparent, no-haggle online pricing there. You can see everything, cars, trucks, vans, like I said, pre-owned, brand new, whatever it is. All of it is covered under the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, which means if you buy a car at Bill Curry Ford, as long as you still own that car, no matter how long it is, you're covered with the powertrain warranty. You don't have to worry about engine trouble. You don't have to worry about a little pinging sound. Oh my God, this is going to be triple or quadruple digit mechanic expenses. No, you're covered. Just bring it back to the service center there. They are a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. And check them out. Remember, if you want to just stay at home too, they will bring you back. If you see something on the website you like, call them up. They'll deliver it to your house. Just a test drive, much less if you buy it. It's all there. Bill Curry Ford, serving the Tampa Bay area for 60 years now. We'll be back next week. Like I said, I'm going to try and keep doing the shows a little earlier in the week for now, just because the Bucks are playing a day earlier than they normally do on Saturdays. But we'll do our show early next week, and then at that point, we'll be getting ready for a Saturday preseason game one last time, and then getting ready for the regular season. Bucks Titans this weekend should be fun. Julio Jones is there practicing, even though Mike Evans and Russell Gage aren't, like I said. Chris Godwin is doing some drills, so there's some uplifting stuff there as far as they're bringing him along slowly, but he looks like he should be on schedule to be back when we want to see him. It's all coming together. So, as always, thank you to the Joes, first of all, joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere, internet, TV, radio for Bucks coverage, all in one place. It's right here, and it is a privilege to be on this website in front of all of you, so thanks to the Joes for giving me that chance. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great rest of your week and a great weekend. I'll be back next week, and like I said, email me if you want to, or oh, the schedules. I forgot. I got the fridge schedules. I'm going to start sending them out. Email me if you want one, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. I have typed them up, and I'm emailing them out this week to people that I've already asked. But if you want one too, just email me. And other than that, I'll talk to you guys a little bit down the line. And until then, wherever you are, be safe, have fun. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and let's go Bucks.